Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, oh, hey, nah.
Welcome to Human Design On Air. I'm your host, Peter Rowe, from loveyourhumandesign.com. And this show is all about human design and the human design system. And today we have a great show lined up for you. We're going to be talking about the incarnation cross of tension, which is it's a very interesting cross. It can be a little bit uncomfortable. It can be a little bit challenging for, I'd say, probably the people that are born with it and the people that live and work with the people of the cross of tension. But it has a really beautiful purpose. And I think this is one of those crosses that, you know, I think it can really help us see the gift in design, that there's a purpose for everything. And to help me discuss that is my co-host, the Reverend Rick of RevRick.webs.com. Reverend Rick, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Peter. Always a pleasure to be here. Hello, everybody. And Peter, I just want to let you know there's so much energy in this cross of tension that I'm looking forward to this discussion, because both my partner and I had one of these lead gates. Neither one of us was the cross of tension, but we had one or more of the gates. And boy, I can tell you some of the things that we had the gate of provocation. And there was quite a bit of button pushing going on. So this is sure to be a very interesting and enlightening conversation today.
I am sure it will be. And a couple of the characters three of the characters that we pulled out for the blog post I wrote about too, J.R.R. Tolkien and P.T. Barnum, of course, of a lot of different things, but probably most famous for Barnum and Bailey's Circus. And then Mel Gibson, I decided to just leave that one there and figured we would talk about it on the show. But all three of these gentlemen are born under the cross of tension. And I think very clearly as we talk about this cross, you'll be able to see from whatever limited knowledge you have of these gentlemen that, you know, that you can see their cross in action by just the way they live their lives or the actions that they did within their lives at one time or another. And I do want to put a caveat. Well, first of all, let me direct you to that blog post. If you go to loveyourhumandesign.com, and on the right-hand side near the top, click on Peter's blog, and then click on the article, Incarnation Cross of Tension. And there's a lot of great stuff there. There's a mandala right there. You can click on and get a larger size. There's an article that's going to contain some of the material we're going to talk about. And if you scroll down, there's charts for those three gentlemen that I mentioned. And one of the caveats I thought after I wrote that and after I sent out an email to let people know in my news group about this show is I did want to give the caveat that just because someone's the cross of tension doesn't necessarily mean, you know, some of the cross of tension, we're looking at the incarnation cross, which is an important aspect of somebody's design. But, you know, that's just a piece. And there are going to be people that have the incarnation cross of tension that are going to be, how shall I put it, Rick, thorny, a little bit intense to live with or know as a friend.
A little challenging, perhaps.
a little challenging. And there's also going to be people that are cross of tension that are warm and fuzzy. And from time to time, they may challenge you a bit, but they're going to do it in a more in a more loving way, or it's going to feel in a more loving way. And again, this is because of the other aspects within their design. So I just wanted to put that caveat out there before we get into this, because I think we'll probably end up talking a little bit more about the edginess of the cross. But, you know, we always put that caveat out there because anytime we're looking at a piece of, focusing in on a piece of design, that's only part of the story. And you really have to step back and take a look at that whole design, you know, to really get the full picture of someone. But I think as we get into this, if you happen to know or be in relationship or be friends with somebody that has this design or even has one or two of the gates of the four gates in this design, I think you're probably going to recognize some of the things we're talking about today.
And Peter, I would even add to that what you said earlier about, you know, through design we get to realize and really see what all these different aspects of ourselves are and the real purpose behind it. You know, like you said, some people born under the cross of tension are going to be a bit challenging to live with, but then when you take a step back and realize it's not personal, you know, they're not engaging in personal attacks. It's all just the relationships of the energies that are being played out, and then you realize there's a purpose for them to be that challenging. And then the journey then becomes, okay, what is the challenge, and what is the lesson to be learned from that challenge? And that's all stuff that we're going to be, you know, taking a look at today in our journey through this cross.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I say in my blog post, I think one of the beautiful aspects of understanding this is this: if you can get yourself to a perspective to see some of these energies in the light that we're going to talk about it, to see the gift, to see the gem within the thorny or edgy aspects of this design or these energies, then you can potentially shift the paradigm from perhaps somebody with this energy annoys you to seeing that as, hey, this person's really helped give me a gift and got me moving in a direction that's going to help me. And, you know, and that's one of the reasons both Reverend Rick and I are here, is to potentially help shift your perspective, to help you look at these energies as not personal, but just energy with a purpose. So, Reverend Rick, do you have thoughts on, I guess, let's go back. When you first encountered the incarnation cross of tension, what thoughts did you have about it?
Well, one of the things that struck me was that I actually have three of the gates of the cross of tension in my design, but not as lead gates. So, as I said, I'm not a cross of tension, but I do have a lot of that energy. And so I started looking at it from the viewpoint of, well, how is it different? You know, I have those gates activated in my chart. How is it different for me than somebody born under this cross? Well, of course, someone born under the cross has all four gates activated, and they are the lead energies. So it's the primary energies that they're putting out into the world, and the primary connection points, I guess, is probably a good way of phrasing it, when they meet others, you know, in their interactions with others. So, you know, for me, I was thinking, okay, I don't quite live out the same kind of purpose that a cross of tension would have, but there are some similarities, and as I started delving a little deeper into it, I realized, wow, you know, this is actually quite fascinating, quite interesting. And I really got to see another aspect that I hadn't previously looked at in regards to these individual gates. and how they can come together to help somebody move beyond a place of being stuck, really. And that's part of what this energy of tension is all about, is from a human design perspective. It's to help people move, not be stuck and not stay stuck, but to help them move through, over, under, around, you know, whatever it takes, past an obstacle or obstruction. So it was very educational for me to start looking at this and really seeing it from a position of, it's not my cross, but I still have a lot of the same energy. Wow, this is pretty interesting.
And what you just said alludes to sort of, when I started to get to know the cross, the analogy that came to my mind is the tension rod. Like, you know, for a curtain, or they use them a lot for shower curtains, you have a tension rod that you twist and it holds into place and it holds up the curtain. And mm-hmm. that was sort of the analogy that came to me with this cross, is that, you know, people that bring this energy help hold that tension to pull you up. And if we didn't have that energy, then we would potentially fall down into that place of being stuck.
Yep. And it also helps you realize, you know, that there's, like you said before, you know, there's a purpose to the tension. You know, and but too many of us don't take the time to really look at the tension. We just react to it. And so hopefully part of what we convey to people today is, when you're facing this kind of energy, give yourself permission to pause. Give yourself permission to take a step back and look at it rather than just react to it. And I think more and more as people do that in their interactions, they'll start to see that, oh, wow, you know what, it really wasn't personal, and there really is a purpose here, and there really is something for me to learn from this, or something for me to take away for my benefit. But it does require that stifling the reaction kind of thing, and realizing it's not personal. You know, once we get to the point where we realize it's not personal, I think we're better able to take that step back and take an objective look at the whole interaction.
Absolutely. And I just want to pause for a minute in case any of our listeners out there would like to call in and ask a question. Maybe you're cross of tension, or maybe you have somebody in your life, or you know, maybe you have a related question. Our call-in number is 347-426-3457. Again, that's 347-426-3457. So if you'd like to call in and ask a question, Reverend Rick and I would be happy to address that.
Absolutely.
I think one of the places I want to start with is, so if you go out to that blog post, again, it's loveyourhumandesign.com. On the right-hand side, click on Peter's blog, and then click on the Incarnation Cross of Tension. And once you get there, if you scroll down to the human design chart of J.R.R. Tolkien, who again was born under the cross of tension. And one of the things I want to start out pointing out is if you look at this chart and look at the two blue circles near the bottom, these two gates, in a way, you know, I was thinking about it, in a way, they form tension here. Because these two gates, the gates 38 and 39, and they're the gate of provocation and fighting through struggle, they're coming out of the root. And the root center is all about getting things going. It's adrenaline energy. And so here, you know, half the cross has this adrenaline energy of getting things going. And that's one of the things that just sort of stood out to me, is that, you know, you've almost, if you drew a line between the two gate numbers, you've got that tension rod that I was talking about. You've got that rod that's going to poke and push to get that, get the unstuckness or get the fight through kind of energy. I was curious on your thoughts on that, Reverend Rick.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the things that, that strikes me about that is that you can see, well, especially here in J.R.R. Tolkien's chart, because he's got the full channel going from the root up to the solar plexus through gate 39, and on the other side all the way up to the spleen through gate 38. And it almost, they are mirrored gates, 38 and 39, they are mirrored gates. They do have a relationship to each other, but you can see they kind of sort of look like they're pulling on the root going outward towards those other two triangles. So they're kind of putting a pressure and a tension on that root center as they leave it. So that's one of the things that struck me when you were talking about the tension rod.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, let's talk about J.R.R. Tolkien here. You know, his books, as you may know, the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And so in this role of the Cross of Tension, just think about what, through his writing, what he forced us to look at. You know, one of the biggest themes of those whole things is good versus evil. And we may be, you know, if you take it from a place of being stuck or being, I guess I would say, from a narrow-minded viewpoint of just good. You know, looking at it only the good aspects of things, or from a narrow-minded aspect of just looking at the negative, at the evil. He really, through his story or stories, forced us to take a deep look at good and evil and potentially moved us into a different understanding of that.
And through his stories, he not just forced us to take a look at the battle between good and evil, or the forces of light and the forces of dark, or however you want to phrase it. He also challenged us to take a look at that within ourselves. Where do we fit in that struggle? You know, what do we identify with, and how do we fit, you know, in the grand scheme of things? Would we have had the courage to, in the case of the Lord of the Rings, would we have had the courage to take the ring back to, you know, back to where it was created? You know, where do our alliances lie, if you will? So one of the things that he really did was help provoke, you know, that struggle within ourselves of, when it comes down to it, are you good or are you evil? You know?
Yeah, where do you align?
Yeah,
with that, and a closely interlinked, you know, and this is something that humans have been struggling with, the understanding, you know, because a lot of this is provoking, you know, it's physically provoking into potential action, but it's also provoking or cajoling into understanding. And for thousands of years, us humans have been battling with the understanding of what is good and evil, where do I align with it. And then the other big topic of his novels, or his trilogy anyway, Lord of the Rings, is then that relationship with power. And this, he really, I think, drove home. I don't think you could read these books without thinking about, what if I had the ring? How would I use that ring? Would I get drawn down the path of Gollum and be so obsessed with the power to be, you know, to you've read the book or seen any of the movies, you know, Gollum goes around, my precious, you know, he worships that ring, totally under the spell of power.
Yep.
And I don't think you could read these novels without being moved into a space of examining what power means to you and how you would potentially use it.
Yep. And would it corrupt, as the saying goes? Or
absolutely.
Would you control it? or if you were part of the cross attention, would you have the energy to control it?
Absolutely.
Who knows? Perhaps.
Perhaps. Well, Reverend Rick, any other thoughts on J.R. Tolkien in regards to this before we sort of go back to the more focused cross itself?
You know, I would actually really like to use his chart as the focal point for the discussion of the gates, mainly because he actually has, for three of the four cross-attention gates, he has the full channel defined. And seeing that full channel helps the purpose of that energy really be fulfilled. In other words, it's not looking for its other half, quote unquote. You know, he's got the full channel going up from the spleen. I'm sorry, from the root to the spleen and from the root to the solar plexus. He's got the full channel going from through the 48 all the way up to the 16 in the throat. And so, because of that, the energy of these gates has the potential to really be fulfilled. And so we actually can use his chart and discuss a little more fully what the purpose behind these kinds of energies really is. Does that sound all right to you?
It sounds great. And you know, what you're saying here is he has the channel from, you know, if we focus in, he has the full channel from the root to the solar plexus and the root to the spleen, and then he has, if you look at it as pathways, so look, let's take a quick look at this here. Not only does he have those two channels, but he also has two pathways. You know, if you put a pencil on his root and you could only go on colored in lines, so like the circuitry in electricity, you could only go on circuits that were fully connected. You can go up to the spleen, and then from the spleen, you can actually get to the throat two different ways. You can go directly up to the throat, or you can go through the identity center and up to the throat. So just on a very high level, what we're looking at is somebody with J.R.R. Tolkien, is somebody that was wired to express this energy all by himself. He's got
yep.
the full circuitry to allow this energy to express this energy all by himself and in a couple of different ways.
And we can even go a step further and put the pencil on the solar plexus and it can travel down to the root and continue up to the throat. So it'll go all the way from there.
Absolutely. In fact, actually, that reminds me, Reverend Rick, in an eighth grade English class, we read the trilogy, and I was not a very quick reader, and it was just a one semester course, and we had to read all three books, and so we were basically supposed to read about 40 to 50 pages a night, which was, for me, was at the time, was probably 2.5 to 3 hours of reading. And so I would often go to sleep, you know, just having finished my reading for the night. And I can tell you that, you know, from that experience, I had a lot of emotional, dark dreams. Again, you know, this is coming from the solar plexus. You know, you think about the material that's contained in that trilogy. It's very... there are parts that are terrifying. There are parts that are, you know, when they, different parts, they get back together or they have a victory in the battle, you know, so there's a lot of emotion packed into the writing. And so, again, that's just illustrating what Reverend Rick's pointing out, that that solar plexus, that the basically description and the inclusion of emotional energy throughout those novels is directly wired here for J.R. Tolkien to be expressed.
So where would you like to take us first? Which gate would you like to take over first?
Well, let's start with his lead gate, which was the 38.
Okay.
So why don't you tell our listeners all about gate 38?
Because I'd rather take 39.
Well, why don't you take 39 and 38, and I will take 48 and 21.
Okay. All right, 38.
Because they're a pair, right? 38 and 39.
38 and 39 really are a pair, yes. And you can tell from the chart that you have here, the circles on the chart are basically right next to each other. They're mirror images of each other. They are going down to that root center. They are the middle gates on the left and right sides, one going diagonally up to the right, one going diagonally up to the left. So 38 goes up to the left and 39 goes up to the right. And when we look at these, you know, Peter, you mentioned earlier about circuitry in electronic circuits and all that, but these energies found in a person's chart also fit into different kinds of circuits. And gate 38 and gate 39 happen to be part of the same circuit. And we call that circuit the knowing circuit. It's ruled by this aha pulse of instant knowingness that, you know, sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. And sometimes you got to really struggle for it and sometimes you got to really have your buttons pushed for it, you know. And so with that being said, another aspect of this is gate 38 and gate 39 are both very individual energy. That knowing circuit is a individual type of energy, which means it is largely not understood by others. So if you happen to have this cross, or if you happen to have these two gates, or even just one of those gates, the expression of that energy is a very individual expression for the person. You know, if you have it, then it's a very individual and unique energy for you, and not everybody's going to be able to understand what it is that you're dealing with, and they're not always going to understand your actions based out of the expression of those energies. And it's okay, because being an individual energy, it's meant for you. It's not meant necessarily for others. Now, there is an element of adaption in society when individual energy is expressed. We tend to say that a successful individual expression leads to more global consequences, or not consequences, but help me out here, Peter. More, it's more of an impact on the greater society. How's that?
Well, and again, because it's you know, ultimately this is about knowing, so it has a translation. So the knowing goes beyond the individual,
right,
to the collective.
And in this particular case for J.R.R. Tolkien, as you mentioned, the energy goes all the way up to his throat so it can get expressed. And so part of the purpose for him was to make sure this knowingness got shared. You know, he was wired so that his knowingness could be put out there for the collective. It could be shared with, you know, with the larger group and hopefully be accepted and adopted. And with the popularity of his books, you can see he had a pretty big impact. But when we look at the individual gates, we're going to look at gate 38 first. Now, from his chart, you can see that's the first gate in the right-hand column of numbers that we see towards on the left side of the graphic. that's the first gate in the black column, known as the personality column. And that is activated by the sun, which is the primary energy activator, I guess, for our human energies. And this is known as the gate of the fighter. You know, this is an energy to deal with opposition. But it also, in J.R.R. Tolkien's case, you know, it's a gate that's part of what we call the channel of struggle. And when it matches up with gate 28 in the spleen, as it does in this chart, that is the energy that we're seeing here. It's the energy of struggle. It's a design of stubbornness. It's an energy that says, I need to fight with this element. You know, I need to fight with this piece, this piece of information, or this element, or this situation, or I need to struggle with this part of my life in order to find that point of knowingness. And sometimes it's wrestling with your own, you know, with the knowingness that's in your own mind. You know, if that aha moment shows up, and for whatever reason you question it, you doubt it, you may struggle with your own knowledge, your own knowingness, before attempting to share it with someone. But again, as Peter mentioned, it's knowing, you know, what you know is not what everybody else knows. They won't know anything about it. They won't know anything about it until you get to share it with them. So, and a lot of times that sharing won't happen until after you've had a period of struggle. That's what this gate is all about. This gate is the energy to be yourself. Again, it's individual energy. It's energy to be yourself and maintain who you are and maintain your own sense of self-worth, I guess. So that you can make it through that struggle, so that you can make it through that fight, so that you can reach that aha moment and get to that point of clarity where you actually absolutely know. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, and I was just going to say, you just sort of summarized the Lord of the Rings trilogy. You know, it's over 1,000 pages of fight and struggle to reach the mountain and throw the ring in.
Yep. So, and that gets, so, like I said, it's a mirror to gate 39, and there's a lot of similarities here between the two of them, but there's some marked differences too, and so I want to just kind of mention, using J.R.R. Tolkien's chart here, what some of those differences are. This gate 38, which is the fighter, matches up with gate 28 in the spleen, and you know, we've said before in other programs, the spleen is all about that physical well-being. You know, it's that awareness center that's concerned with the body and the environment in terms of making sure that it's a safe environment and all the senses firing at once to, you know, to keep us safe, to keep us aware, to keep us, you know, our intuition firing and all that. So this is starting from gate 38, it's an adrenalized energy to fight, to struggle, to reach that point where we know the struggle was worth it. And when we get to that point, you know, we've had that sometimes even a physical struggle, we get to that point where we know it was all worth it. And then we know we can share it easily with others. You know, we get into that space of, okay, now I'm ready to share it. On the other side, when we look at gate 39, gate 39 is going up diagonally to the right, and it joins with gate 55 from the solar plexus. And the solar plexus, we know, is all about emotional energy. So just as 38 begins a struggle for knowing and leading to some kind of, you know, physical awareness, gate 39 is a struggle for knowing that leads to some kind of emotional awareness. And what I really want to point out is, for gate 39, it's not so much the same kind of struggle as 38 as it is a provocation. It's known as the gate of the provocateur. It's a very emotional energy being tied to the solar plexus like that. But it's all about, and I'm going to put it in, you know, just colloquial terms here, Peter, it's all about pushing buttons. whether it's your buttons getting pushed or you pushing other people's buttons, it's all about pushing buttons and noticing the reaction that you get. And I just, you know, one thing that comes to mind is my partner had this gate. And I never understood why he had to sit there and push my buttons and make me angry. This was long, long before I knew anything about human design. And even he didn't know anything about human design, but something he said really strikes me now, Peter, and that is he would tell me, I have to push buttons because it's the way I know. It's the way I get to know you. And when I looked when I started looking at human design and I started looking at my chart and his chart and all that, I realized, wow, that is the definition of this gate. This gate is all about pushing buttons to know your surroundings, to know your environment, to know your spirit, to find your spirit, or to find the spirit of someone else. Do you push someone else's buttons to get to know them, or do you let other people push your buttons so that they can get to know you? In other words, we reveal who we really are by the provocations that we face. And hopefully that makes sense. But that really, you know, that brings up one of the other aspects of this gate that was very interesting to me, and that is that the provocation really, if we can take out that personal aspect, you know, Peter, you and I always say, it's not personal, it's just the mechanics of the energy. If we can focus on the fact that it's not personal, it really is the mechanics of the energy, then the provocation is not meant to push us to an emotional state of anger or anything like that. The emotions are really just the wave coming out of that solar plexus. But the energy itself is an energy that says, wait, pause, look at this. Take an assessment or maybe a reassessment. You know, analyze what's happening here. Take a look at it more deeply and see if there's something that needs to be changed. And that's what the knowingness that comes through this channel really is all about. It's about allowing yourself either provoking others or allowing yourself to be provoked so that you can take the time to see and analyze and assess the reaction to know whether or not something needs to change. And that's an aspect that most of us don't really get to that point. You know, as being an emotionally charged energy, it's hard. It's hard to do that. And I even admit I didn't, even knowing about my design now, I'm still not quite there all the time, but I'm still working on it. So, Peter, you wanna add anything to that?
No, it makes a lot of sense what you were talking about, and I guess I'd add two things. One, the provocation with your partner, especially with your design being a fifth line, which we've talked about on other shows, being a profile aspect or being an aspect of design that's harder to get to know, that takes longer. You know, exactly what you said, that through pushing your buttons, that was a mechanism that he got to know you better.
Yep.
And two other things. You know, thinking about this is sort of an epiphany for me, I guess, today. Thinking about the provocation being individual energy, and it, again, we said this before, individual energy, sometimes the rest of us get it and sometimes we don't. And so there are times that people will be provoking, and it will be annoying because it's provoking energy, but it may also be annoying because we don't get it. You know, somebody's trying to push our button, or somebody's trying to provoke us into action, and we don't even really know how to react because we don't get what they're driving at, because it's individual expression. We're not really understanding how they want us to react, or we're not even understanding, you know, it's like they're trying to push a button, but to us, they missed all the buttons altogether. and it's just kind of like, what? You know, we're provoked into reactions like, I just don't get it. You know, why would somebody be, you know, not to be derogatory, but why would somebody be so stupid as to say that? Or, just because we don't get it. And then sort of along that lines, again, because we've got a lot of individual energy, two full channels between the 38 and the 28 up to the spleen, and the 39 to the 55 up to the solar plexus. There's a lot of individual energy here. There very well may be another author out there that has a similar design to J.R.R. Tolkien that was prolific, but because this is individual energy, their books may be sitting on a bookshelf or a library somewhere where that hardly anybody's read it, because their story we didn't get.
Yep.
The expression that they had just didn't make the translation for us. And so, unfortunately for them, they didn't have near the popularity of Tolkien's novels.
And the other side of that too, Peter, is, you know, they may not, the person being provoked may not want to face that provocation. They may not want to face the knowingness that comes through it. You know, because there's always that choice as well. It's like, you know, and that reveals a lot about the individual as well. So we're still showing, you know, our individual natures. But it's, you know, it could be just a matter of, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to know about that.
Absolutely. And that author, 50 years from now, somebody may pull their books off the shelf, and suddenly we as a society, or we as a collective, get it. We're ready to face that topic. And, you know, and then they become wildly popular after their death.
Yep.
But that's just to illustrate how that energy works.
Yep. So, would you like to take us to the other side?
The other side. Dun, dun, dun. Okay, well, let's start with the red state. Oh, I was just probably provocative for some people. I didn't mean to. I have the gate 39 as well, so.
Okay, you're just helping them find their spirit, that's all.
Gate 48 is off of the spleen, and gate 48 is a deep gate. It's called depth, and it's called the well. You know, you dive into the well, and, you know, or you go into the well, and, you know, the expression, you go into the well again and again and again. So gate 48, and it can be depth, it can be breadth. So people that have this energy tend to get very detailed, but that can also be expressed as just getting very broad. You know, so it can be wanting to know absolutely everything about a particular thing, or it can be, it can also be expressed as sort of getting a very broad range of experience. In terms of profession, this could be somebody that gets level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, level 5, on and on training in a particular thing. Or this could be somebody that takes one class and then takes another class in a different subject and then a third class. In college terms, this could be somebody that, you know, starts out as an economics major and then switches to business and then switches to physics or psychology or art, wanting to gain that broad amount of information or the broad experience or the deep experience. So, again, going back to Tolkien, you know, you can just see it in his novels. very deep into the descriptions, the characters, the different species that he brings, you know, elves and wizards and dark horses and hobbits and, you know, on and on.
Yep.
Just very deep. And in Tolkien's case, he has this entire channel, which is nicknamed the Channel of Talent. So again, with, you know, as we said before, he's got all this energy and he's got this design of talent to go deeply into the expression and the details of it and express it in a in really kind of a continuum. You know, again, it's defined energy. Everywhere that's colored in is defined energy, and what that means is it's a continuous source. It's a consistent source. And, you know, so in his case, he just had this consistent energy to express all that stuff.
And once again, you know, in terms of looking at the circuitry, this energy is a collective energy, which means it's the keynote that goes along with it is it's got to be shared. You know, this is a talent that must be shared. And so he picked a medium where he could share. He became an author, and the things he wrote were meant to have an impact and meant to be shared, and so he made sure he did. But even more so, there's an element that says, you know, share this with the collective, share this depth with the collective for the common good. You know, make sure that it is something that can be make sure it's something that can be shared with the larger group for the benefit of the larger group. And I think in all of his writings, he actually attempted to do that. He was calling attention to something that he saw as needing attention, but needing society's attention, not just individual attention.
Yep. And again, for the reader, they may really get the depth and really go there with Tolkien into that depth. You know, the description of the elves and where the elves live and the trees that are able to walk and on and on. But depending on your design, you may not want to go there. And you know, both are fine. But you may choose that you don't want that depth. And that's probably partly from your design that you're choosing, well, I like the story, but I don't have to take it that deep. I mean, you know, in your terms, it's a story of good and evil and battles. And that's what I get out of reading it. And somebody mm-hmm. else may, you know, may be just really down in that depth and in absorbing the, you know, all the description and interaction. And it's all good.
Yep, they'll take it to a deeper level. You know, if they have that same Gate 48, they may take what his premises are and just take them to a much deeper level, even more so than what he had intended.
Absolutely, I'm sure there's probably people out there that you know are writing ancillary stories or. You know, drawing animated cartoons and all kinds of things. I imagine if you Google it, you can find at least one, if not a few, fan clubs or things like that on the internet.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So, Reverend Rick, anything else about the Gate 48?
No, I think you did a wonderful job of covering it.
And so then that leads us to the Gate 21. In the Gate 21, it's off the Will Center, the Heart Will Center. And this is the gate of the Huntress, or the Hunter. And this gate is called Biting Through in the I Ching. And this is basically energy to go out and get what you want, to get what you need. And that's kind of where that will comes in, when it's coming from sort of the more willful flavor of that energy. It's going to be about getting what you want. When it's coming from the more, not quite sure what to call this side, but more, I guess the more physical side, it's about, you know, it's more of that hunter-huntress. It's getting what you need to supply your heart, to supply your physical being. And, you know, so again, we've got a cutting energy here. You know, it's about going out and hunting it down. You know, it's about going out and staking your claim, you know, to whatever it is that's driving you. Reverend Rick?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about the correlation to the stories, to the Lord of the Rings and what you were talking about with power earlier. And, you know, that plays right into this gate as well. Because this gate is not just about going out and getting what you need. It's also about controlling your environment. And it's about using power to overcome, using whatever power is at your disposal to overcome whatever obstacles you face in getting what you want or what you need. And so this again ties back to, of course, all the gates are related in the cross here. But this goes back to the 38 and 39 as well, you know, saying, okay, so now here is the unique tribal materialistic type of power to, and, you know, willpower or, you know, ego power, whatever it needs to be, to go out, overcome, and acquire. And that was also evidenced in the books, again by the ring wearer, you know, in the books. I think it came out that there were actually 9 rings of power, and they were given to different societies, you know, elves and humans and dwarves and, you know, whatever else. And it was, how was that power used? So this is this biting through, this energy of hunting and abiding through is really about the justified use of power, the power at your command to go out and do what you need to do, to go out and get what you need to get. In a sense, I guess you could say it's even tied to survival.
Absolutely. And again, this is the heart will center is also the home of the ego. And so right into that, wrapped into that is the appropriate use of that power, and does it become more of the, do you become more of a tool of the ego when you're dealing with that, when you have that power in your hands?
Mm-hmm.
How do you utilize that? Do you utilize that for the best good, or do you utilize that for to fulfill the desires of the ego?
Yep. And when we look at these four gates together as the cross of tension, and we start to look at why would it be called the cross of tension? Well, we see right away there's three gates right here, 21, 38, and 39, that all deal with getting past some form of obstruction. Using power and energy to struggle with and overcome, you know, some kind of opposition in order to survive on the material plane. Well, there's always tension when there's a struggle involved. And of course, 48 being the depth, getting to the depth of what the issue really is, getting to the core, the heart of the obstruction or the opposition. To know exactly, you know, and then of course the knowingness of the 30 and 39 come in, getting to the core of the obstruction so that you know how to deal with it and how to get past it and what appropriate power to use in order to do that.
And And that sort of takes us full circle, because as we started out, we talked about how, you know, this cross has an edge to it. And really, by definition, it has to, because you've got those three gates trying to work their way through, and you've got to have depth, because if you just scratch the surface, you're not necessarily going to come to the right answer of how to move through.
And probably won't ask.
Yeah, and you won't have enough information, or you won't have enough momentum to push through that.
Yep.
Anything else you'd like to add about the cross of tension, Reverend Rick?
Probably just that, you know, we've mentioned this in previous shows where we've talked about the crosses. The cross of tension is another one of those crosses where you have several different versions of it, depending on which gate shows up in the lead position there. For J.R.R. Tolkien, it was gate 39 there in the Personality Sun. But as you scroll down on Peter's blog page, you can see that P.T. Barnum has gate 39 in that sun position, personality sun position. So,
Tolkien has 38. I think you were thinking 38, but you said 39.
Oh, did I? Sorry, my apologies.
Yeah,
Tolkien has 38. Mel Gibson also has gate 38 in the personality sun position. But P.T. Barnum has gate 39 in the personality sun position. So even though they're all the cross of tension, they may represent those energies, they may express those energies differently depending on what time of year they were born and what gate was in the lead. And we haven't even mentioned anything about gate 21 or 48 being in that personality sun position. So there's four different examples, I guess, of the cross of tension that can be out there. And because of that, there's a variety of ways in which this energy can get expressed in your life. So it's not always going to be the same as what we're discussing here with J.R.R. Tolkien. They'll be similar because the gates do carry those same expressions, but how they get portrayed in your life may be different depending on what your gate combinations are. So that's the only other thing I would add to that.
You know, and that's a great example, because if we just look at Tolkien versus Barnum, P.T. Barnum, Barnum Bailey Circus, and that went by several other names, but Tolkien, and you look at his books, one of the big themes is fighting through the struggle of understanding good and evil. Barnum, and that's the gate, lead gate that Tolkien had, was gate 38, fighting through to gain an understanding. P.T. Barnum, on the other hand, has the 39, the provocative energy in the lead, and you think about his circus and his freak show. In addition, as I was researching him, I discovered that he, in the 1850s, pushed forward political things. He had produced a minstrel show that really poked satire at white attitudes about blacks, and so really forced people to examine, leading, you know, this is 10 years before the Civil War, forced people to take a look at racism and slavery in a very provocative way. So here's P.T. Barnum that's going to tend to do it a little bit more through provocation, whereas, you know, I would say in a way Tolkien's is a little bit softer but more about the fight. Reverend Rick, your thoughts on that?
Well, I was just now looking at the different at the birth dates, and P.T. Barnum was born almost a century before J.R.R. Tolkien. So it's interesting, you know, looking at that. It's interesting because P.T. Barnum, like you said, he's there to provoke and to push people into really thinking about this. And as you said, it was, 10 years before the Civil War, and he was already calling people out on all of that.
Yep.
But if we look at a timeline of it, he does that. The Civil War occurs. There's the divisions. You know, now there's clear and marked divisions in the country between North and South and the way they view things. And then who comes in later but J.R.R. Tolkien and starts really pushing buttons with making people look at those kinds of divisions and the struggles between, you know, good and evil and what defines good and what defines evil and all that. So it's kind of an interesting chronology, if you will.
And I could think you could take that a step further as we go into look at Mel Gibson. And Mel Gibson had at least a couple of those Mad Max movies, which are looking at sort of the struggle for survival and good and evil after, you know, some kind of apocalypse or whatever.
Yeah, the aftermath.
And, so that's sort of the modern day, or modernizing that battle of good and evil and right and wrong. And, again, coming from somebody from this cross.
Very interesting.
So, and I think if we look at Mel Gibson's chart here in the middle, the interesting sort of twist that he brings to this is that he's his throat, his expression, is powered by the will center. So what I think he brings to this mix is more of a viewpoint from what about me? So it's more of he focuses in more on, or makes, I'd say he focuses on it, but he makes you focus on what about me in that situation. It's got this ego edge to it. And,
yep.
You know, that's sort of the flavor that in a lot of his movies, I would say, have, you know, even like Braveheart, he makes you think about.
Well, and to take it a step further, you can even look at his stint as the director, you know, in the movies that he put out. Because if we look at his chart, you know, he's got that gate 21 in the will center feeding into gate 45 on the throat center, defining his throat. And as we said, that gate 21 is all about, you know, the power to go out and get what you need. Gate 45 is the ultimate expression of that energy, being able to go out and share with others, you know, express what it was that he needed and how he went and got it, and how he thinks that you know, the rest of the world may need to get it as well. But that gate 45 is defined by his south node. And I think I just contradicted my own thoughts. Because I was going to say, the south node is the early part of life, isn't it?
It is.
It is, okay. So in the early part of life, he was developing, I'll put it this way, he was developing the kinds of expressions that he would share with the world. And, you know, coupling it with Gate 21, he was after the stuff that he knew would serve him. You know, and ultimately serve others. This is tribal energy. So he's looking for the small group now to serve. But also, again, you know, maintaining that control as well as the provocation. But you know what's really interesting about this, Peter, is that, and I'm going to double check here to make sure, but yes, Mel Gibson is actually the only one of the three that has an undefined root center.
Yep.
So the struggling and the provocation that he would experience would actually be different for him in different situations, which, like you said, through the different movies that he did, the Braveheart and the Mad Max movies, you know, it could be, you know, all of those things, he's still going to have that element of tension, that element of provocation and of struggle and all that. But it's going to be slightly different depending on his circumstances and his environments, and that shows through in all the different situations that he finds himself in his movies.
Well, in his movies in life, as you may know, he's come under criticism in the past few years because it's come out through, I guess, a couple incidents that, you know, he has some anti-Semitic views. And so, again, your comment to his energy is more directed at his at tribe or the small group. So, again, this is just extrapolation, but you could say his tribe may be the people that share his viewpoint.
His religious convictions, yeah.
In that manner. And, you know, I know, for example, he was cast for the movie Hangover 2, and the other actors said they weren't going to do the movie, and so they got somebody else to play the tattoo artist in that movie, which I think it was the director had cast Mel Gibson for. So again, that's sort of an example going back to that individual energy. Obviously, those other actors don't get his viewpoint, understand, or won't go there with, you know, with his tribal beliefs. And, you know, so this is sort of the other end of the spectrum from Tolkien, where it was very collective expression or an individual expression that was adapted by the collective. And here with Mel Gibson and this, at least this particular aspect of his life, it's a individual expression which the collective is refusing, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And you know, like we said at the beginning, and it's okay. You know, that individual energy, if he can't express it well to others and you know, have them understand, it's okay, because it's really meant for his own knowingness. And if the collective is ready, they'll share in the knowing and they'll adopt it. But if the collective is not ready, then it'll be rejected, and that's what he's experiencing now. It's not, you know, the timing is not right for him to share that, and maybe it never will be. But it really is something meant for him.
And you could get judgmental and say, oh, that's really terrible that he's anti-Semitic. But if you can look at it from that perspective that, hey, he's actually giving us a gift here, because just the fact that these actors from The Hangover made a stand is contributing to our collective understanding that if we all as a collective strongly believe in something, then, you know, we can stand up for it and make a difference. So, you know, you could get all judgmental and say that's horrible that he has those beliefs, but the fact is, and this is, you know, this is going back to what's the purpose of the cross attention, the fact is that he can make us a better educated collective, even though his ideas might not be popular or accepted by most of us.
Exactly, and that's what that energy of provocation is all about. It's provoking us to find our own spirit. You know, he's showing his own, and through the showing of his own stance or belief system or whatever, he's provoking us to find our own and to express that. You know, and that's what these other actors did. They expressed where they were coming from. And, of course, it had ramifications and implications and everything. But as you said, if we can get away from the personal, get away from the judgment, and look at what was the gift, what was the benefit, it's really calling to attention. You know, again, it's that cross of tension that says, look at this. Look at this situation. And from his perspective, he was showing what he believed. But really, from a more global perspective, he's calling attention to a certain belief system, I guess, if you call it that, and forcing us to take a look at it and either identify or not. Like we said at the beginning, where are the alliances? Does it resonate with you or doesn't it? But that's part of that tension there, is forcing us to take a look at it within ourselves.
Yep, take a look and take a stand. Don't bury your head in the sand.
Yep. Yeah, cross attention is really good for that. They don't like fence sitters.
That's well put. I like that. Well, Reverend Rick, anything else you'd like to add about the cross of tension or any of these three charts here that we've looked at before we go?
It always amazes me how well things come together, and I never really would have put P.T. Barnum, J.R. Tolkien, and Mel Gibson together. But it's amazing how human design just kind of shines a bright new light on things and allows you to make the correlations between things that ordinarily you wouldn't. So I'm always amazed at things like that. It's always an educational experience for me. So thank you for putting all these things together for us today.
My pleasure. Anything you've got coming up on the in the coming week?
Next Tuesday, if I can plug the Spiritual Help Desk. As most of our listeners know, Peter, you brought several people together to create the Spiritual Help Desk, and that's another blog talk show on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And next Tuesday I'll be producing the show, and our topic will be the topic of freedom. And as our regular listeners know, there's been a different topic each month, each time I've produced a show. And so this is going to be, the continuation of the story, so to speak. So again, Spiritual Help Desk next week on Blog Talk Radio here at 1 p.m. Eastern. And the topic will be freedom.
The unfolding story.
True, yes. Because there's still more to come after that.
There's still more to come. Next Thursday on Human Design On Air at 1 o'clock Eastern here on Blog Talk Radio, we're going to be talking about the incarnation cross of cycles. So we hope you'll join us again next week at 1 p.m.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
And finally, just in wrapping up, if you have your human design chart and would like to know more, please join us for other shows. You can always call in and ask questions. And if you do not have your human design chart, you can always get one for free by going to RevRick, that's R-I-C, so RevRick.webs.com, or loveyourhumandesign.com. Till next Tuesday, we wish you well and hope you've enjoyed the show.
Take care, everyone.